This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with Duff McKagan, bassist for Velvet Revolver, leader of the band Loaded, ex-bassist with Guns N' Roses, Renaissance man. Is there anything else I'm leaving out?
Kickboxer.
Kickboxer.
Well, you know, aspiring kickboxer, I suppose.
And writer for the Seattle Weekly.
That's right.
You write a very good column, I must say.
Yeah, I saw something. It was on ESPN. I did a live chat on ESPN last week because of a column I'd written. And at the top of ESPN it said, rocker / blogger Duff McKagan.
Oh.
First time I'd ever been referred to as a blogger.
A rocker blogger.
Rocker / blogger.
Yeah. Wow. That's a new term I think they coined.
Yeah.
And just for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess we should open up first with Velvet Revolver and your search for a new lead singer. How's things stand right now?
This is a tough one to really talk about because we wrote a bunch of great material. Things were going so amazing for us, even maybe because of the adversity at the end with Scott. The remaining four of us really came together, and we were really gelling on stage. You know, even with Scott going the direction he was going, We really started to gel, probably better than we ever had on stage. And we got off the road, and we'd let Scott go, and we went in and wrote a bunch of material. And we thought really we'd get a singer right away. We just kind of thought it's not going to be tough.
Right.
And we worked with Royston.
Yes.
Langdon from Space Hog. We really had high hopes for him, and he is a great singer and a great guy. So it wasn't the right thing for us, alas. You know, about 3 weeks into it, 4 weeks into it, working with him, we really could see that, you know, there's just a couple things that didn't fit, and no fault of his, no fault of ours. So we were back to the drawing boards, and there's been a ton of singers.
A few people have been bantered about Lenny Kravitz. I mean, were any of the people that, other than Royston that we read about, were any of those realities?
No, not even close. Lenny was... I mean, I read about it when everybody else did, that he was in our band. So that was just a blatant rumor started from who knows where. The fact of the matter is, we don't have a singer. At some point, we hope to. I think we've all realized that we don't need to rush this thing. We need the right singer. Our singer's got to be great. He can't just be good. And we've had a lot of really good singers send us MP3s and through our management and wherever we get them from. Really, really good guys, but not the great guy for our band.
I spoke with Matt Sorum over the summer. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of love lost between him and Scott. Did you have real personality clashes with Scott? I mean, was there that much animosity between Scott and the rest of the members?
Not so much with me. I've just come to realize, and maybe it's because of my age and how long I've been going through this band sort of situation. Being in a band is really tough. It is like being married to, you know, four other guys.
Sure.
In our case, there's emotion in it because you're creating art together, and it's probably, I've said this before, it's, you know, it's the closest you get to a heterosexual male will get to another heterosexual male emotionally, because you're sharing, you're writing songs together, and you're playing on stage together, and then you're living together, you're on the road together, you're eating together, you've got to deal with business decisions together, then you also have your own. In my case, I have a wife and two kids and a home life, and actually a whole other life that I've created for myself.
Sure.
And maybe because I have created another life, going back to school, practicing martial arts, I have another band that I created when I moved back to Seattle and kind of sort of kept together. We would play, and I had this basis of other guys that I really loved playing with, and definitely not taking anything away from Velvet Revolver. But when Scott started to go south, is my point to all of this, I could see that it was irretrievable.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take it personally. I realized at that point that this indeed is life, and not just in rock music. It's just life. You know, any business you're in, there this can happen, and whether it's drugs and alcohol, or you know, somebody at your workplace finds a better job, part of your team, man, part of your makeup. So you got to move on and adapt, and that's all I look at this as.
Was Scott just pulling away from you guys and wanted to go in another direction? Was he behaving like a diva? You know, if there's any one thing you can point it to, really?
Oh, well, the one thing is drugs.
Oh.
I didn't think that was really a secret. No, you know, diva stuff and all that, I can handle. I get it.
But it's his drug use.
It doesn't. Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, you've been down this road personally and with other bandmates, and he's been in and out of rehab. Is somebody close to him really trying to sit him down and get him straightened out?
No. No. He doesn't have that, and that was really, I think the people around him, they don't really care about that. They want to keep him out there.
Because the pictures I've seen of him on stage this summer with Stuntable Pilots, he didn't look well.
Yeah, and that's too bad. But Joe, you know, the thing is, if you really want to change whatever situation you're in, you've got to do it yourself. And as you grow up and become an adult, and a man, you really realize that nobody's going to do it for you, especially in the music business. You managers and et cetera, say they care for you, but hey, man, they're out to make a buck. Sure, they'd probably rather see you sober and
yeah,
more functional, but they're not going to go the extra mile. I think myself, I've gone the extra mile for Scott a couple times, you know, and I realize now, if somebody's not going to come back and respond to what you're trying to do, you can't keep trying. Or, you
sure.
Know, with me, I'm a sober guy. It's not good for my sobriety to keep on trying to help somebody and there's no response.
At this point, with the lead singers, do you feel like you have to give them a sanity test first?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care about the sanity or the vanity. I get the craziness, and a little bit of it's great. You know, you don't want some homogeneous dude. And there is a lot of homogeneous white rock out there, which I don't think is, you know, doesn't move me at all.
Right.
I like a little craziness, and I grew up playing punk rock, and which was, you know, back in the day, was really about pure adrenaline and emotion, and there was a lot of characters in there, and it made it great.
Let me talk to you about that, your pre-Guns N' Roses days, your favorite bass players, your heroes. Who really influenced you as a player?
Yeah, you would have to really be a early punk rockophile to know stuff I did. But it was such a small scene back in 79, 80,
right. 81,
you know, 79 through 83. And all of us knew everybody else. And there was little fanzines, and there'd be compilation records that, you know, a band from Seattle, a band from Minneapolis, a band from Dayton, Ohio, a band from L.A., you know, we would all be on the same record. But I was in a band. I grew up in a musical family. There was instruments around the house. So by the time I was 6 and 7 and 8, I was pounding on drums to keep in time.
Right.
Because I had to, you know, for family jam sessions or whatever. And I was hearing great music, my older brothers and sisters' music, which was James Gang, Sly and the Family Stone, Led Zeppelin, The Beatles, Rolling Stone, whatever.
All the classic stuff.
Great, great stuff. So I understood what time was. One of my older brothers showed me a G chord, and an A chord, and a D chord. All right, and an E chord. Okay, well, my fingers didn't quite fit on there, but I just kept kind of playing, and I thought, well, guitar's not going to be... And he showed me how to play the birthday song, the Beatles song,
mm-hmm,
on the bass. Now, I played all left-handed because he was left-handed, and I actually write left-handed.
Okay.
So there was left-handed guitars at the house. So that's how I started playing. And my fingers just really didn't work too well on the strings, and now I started to grow into it, and by the time I was in the eighth grade, I started playing with some other guys at school, just jamming. We played Led Zeppelin songs and whatever.
And you were playing bass?
We'd play them all wrong.
And you were playing bass at this point?
I was playing bass, I was playing guitar, and I was playing drums.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really have a direction. I just liked playing all three. Punk rock in Seattle hit. Seattle's a very cultural city. I think punk rock was one of the earlier cities like New York to get like a punk rock record store and a club. And so I saw this punk rock guy walking down the street of our where I lived. This guy with a mohawk, a pink mohawk. And I talked to him. I was like, "Wow, dude! So what do you do? What kind of music should I? What record should I get?" And he took me to this record store. He showed me, like, check this out. He goes, "What do you play?" And I said, "Well, I play everything." He goes, "Let's start a band." And so we started a band. It was called The Veins. Mm-hmm. And we put out a single. Our first gig was opening for an early version of Black Flag. It was an amazing first gig for us. And we started playing gigs. And that was 79. And I guess I was about 13 or 14. It was just great. So I was playing bass in that band. The Fastbacks, which were a band that lasted about 25 years. 20 years out of Seattle. I was their first drummer. They asked me to play drums. And the first song I learned to play on drums was Baby Blue by Badfinger.
Oh, great song.
Yeah. All of a sudden, okay, well, I'm a drummer. They had a drum kit for me. You know, pretty good Pearl drum kit. Then another band, I started playing guitar in another band. So I kind of played, I was playing in three bands at one time, all the time.